The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia.
Bills, Texans, Josh Allen versus Stephon Diggs.
I think we all know Stephon Diggs, at least the public version of Stephon Diggs. You know, sometimes he can't help himself. I think this game is very important to him. I think it's probably more important to him. I really get the sense, guys, that the Bills have moved on.
I've been very impressed with Josh Allen and what he's been able to do with the receiving core that he has. So I do think this game is kind of a coin flip. I'd be fine taking the Bills, but I like the over better.
Mike Danger.
We had this one circled. I mean, as soon as the schedule released, we had this one circled.
We
know what this week is going to be about. It's going to be a lot about Stephon Diggs. The Bills aren't as bad as what we saw on Sunday night, and those kind of losses don't happen too often under Sean McDermott. We expect a different outcome come this Sunday afternoon.
Gene Battaglia.
This should be a Buffalo Bills win, and this is their division to lose.
95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
We'll check in with the pride of Victor, New York later this hour. Seth Payne from Sports Radio 610 in Houston, our Odyssey Sports sister station, stops by the sports bar. We'll learn more about the Houston Texans, all leading up to Sunday's matchup, the Bills and the Texans, here on the Fan Rochester pregame, starting at 9 a.m. Sunday morning with kickoff just after 1 o'clock.
Let's hope, okay, like Sunday morning, like at 9 a.m. No, you're listening at 7 a.m. How could you not? And then hopefully we come back Monday. See, you're not going to be here Monday. What I anticipate will be a victory Monday for the Italian music. It'll be Tim Schneider in.
Mm-hmm. Like, I trust him.
You trust him?
I trust Timmy. Yeah, he'll pull up something. He'll pull up something Italian, and then, you know,
yeah.
I think he's produced the Italian Carousel once or twice, so he probably has a better ear for the Italian hits than I do. I'm just picking songs at random by artists that I've never heard of. Bruno Martino and Teddy Bianchi and whoever else is in there. I'm not really sure. I'm just kind of like, they've got all this music loaded in our library, and I just queue it up on a Victory Monday.
The only sports station in the world where for 2 hours a week you play Italian music and everything else is a sports form.
That's what makes it special, Gene.
Yeah.
That's what makes it special. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now? With all the latest Italian soccer scores from Italy.
When I tell you, and I feel like I live here sometimes, and so do you, mm-hmm. right? Like, you want to come into this business, you're working all hours and everything else. I have been here with this company since 15 years.
Uh-huh.
I've never met him.
You've never met Joe?
Never met Joe.
Me neither.
You've been here longer.
I know. I imagine he's real, a real human. I've heard that he's here. I know
Are
he's here every
sure?
Sunday morning.
Are we sure?
It's a hologram. The hologram of Joe Caprico.
I would think like at some point he would just stop in during the week or something like that.
I know. He's got to be real because every Monday the studio smells like Grecian formula. So it has to be, he has to be a real person.
It's Grecian formula and cigs.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They got that old Italian whiff of cig.
Yeah. I imagine one of these weeks, the guys in my neighborhood, you've heard me talk about the guys in my neighborhood before. You know, they like to play their bocce at the Italian-American Center.
Right.
And, well, one of these times, I'm sure I'll get the invite to go out there. We've both been invited to do play-by-play for their bocce tournament, their bocce league. And that's where I would imagine we would meet Joe Caprigracco for the first time. Not in a work environment, not in this setting, his natural environment.
So he's got to go more local then. Like, that would be my suggestion to Joe Caprigracco. The latest soccer scores. I mean, like, no. The latest bocce scores from the Italian-American
That's
club.
Right. That's right.
Buffalo Road. Yeah.
Give shout-outs to the winning teams every week.
Yeah.
You know, my guys in my neighborhood, when they win, they go out and they get ice cream. They don't get sprinkles. Sprinkles are for champions. But they go out and get ice cream after every win, after every match. Yeah, they've got a little routine. It's unbelievable. I love it.
Can you imagine just being behind the counter wherever it is they go and you see these four Jamos showing up?
Hey.
Like, where are your kids? Oh, no, this is for us.
We just won bocce. Where's my ice cream, damn it?
My danger, now I'm pulling for the Yankees.
Say what?
Yeah, first, it's better for baseball. It is. Secondly, I didn't tell you about this. I think our friend's getting a little full of himself because I get this text today from Jay Binkley. Who we bring on all the time to talk about the Chiefs, saying he wanted to come on our show and talk some Royals.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's just going to come on in and talk about the Royals.
I'm Yeah, I think we're booked today, Jay. I cautioned him. Like, look, that's a nice, just as a friend, nice win over Baltimore, but now you get daddy. It set him off.
You called.
He like, quote, daddy, we're daddy. All the New York, this is Jay texting back. All the New York franchises have zero titles combined in the last decade. KC has four. Now, who is daddy? Hopefully, they kick the Yankees' ass and then slay the Mets. Again, that's if the Mets ever get there.
Wow. Jay, what was the general reaction of Chiefs fans a week ago tonight when they ended up trading up to the Bills to select Patrick Mahomes?
Thank you, Buffalo.
Using the success of the Chiefs to talk smack about the Royals. Jay, even for you, that's a little bit of a stretch.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all. The Royals don't have a leg to stand on in this argument. And in this instance, yeah, the Yankees haven't won anything in a while. The Royals have won a World Series more recently than the Yankees have.
That's sad, yes.
But I tend to believe that the Yankees have a better chance of winning this series than the Royals do. If the Royals win, this would be an upset.
If you follow baseball, and Oriole fans will agree with me on this, were you really surprised that the Royals beat the O's? Like, the O's just kind of limped into the postseason.
Both teams have struggled down the stretch, the Royals included. It was a war of attrition, really. And now, you know, the Orioles get to look at what their roster is going to be next year with some of those free agents that are leaving. What is it all? What do they piece together? I like the Yankees. I like the Yankees in that series. I think the Yankees advance. I think they're in the ALCS.
Against? Feels like Detroit, doesn't it?
It's kind of it's a hot story. But Cleveland, low-key, all season, Cleveland has been one of the best teams in the league. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I know you want to fade teams from the Central because they beat up on the White Sox.
No, dude, I was wrong on that. The way that Detroit took out Houston.
Yeah.
That was impressive. These series? All right, I'm not going to be up for Milwaukee, Philadelphia. That ends up happening. But if it were Mets, Philadelphia, and you get Tigers, Guardians, you get Yankees,
Dodgers, get Padres Dodgers, is the Padres? One. That's the one, man. I mean, Dodgers, Padres, that's going to be... East Coast dads are going to struggle with that one. I'm telling you right now, I'm already preparing. I'm banking sleep. I'm pretending like I'm going to London. I'm going to start banking sleep so I can stay up to watch Padres, Dodgers. That's the series. For all of the talk that you hear from the Bills and Sean McDermott, the next man up mentality, not just Sean McDermott, this is coaches. It's just coach speak, right? Mm-hmm. Curtis Samuel has to be the guy this week. If there's no Shakir and you've got a guy who you're paying 3 years, $24 million, who's been largely invisible or used as a decoy in pre-snap motion so far this year, if you want a redemption from that botched trick play, the opportunity is yours. It's this week. It's Houston. I can look into the future, peer into the future, and I won't be here on Monday, but I have a feeling if on Monday, if the Bills lose, hell, even if they win and Curtis Samuel is invisible, somebody's going to be like, where's Curtis Samuel?
I think we're already there. I think that play just kind of brought into focus, like, this is how we're going to get him involved to draw up something like that.
Here's my concern with the Bills offense. At some point, you're going to have to let Josh sling it vertically. So far this year, those opportunities have been kind of few and far between. There have been opportunities, and he's, you know, we'll always remember the play to Shakir and that Ravens loss. I mean, that was unbelievable. But there's so much emphasis being paid on the horizontal passing game that I think defenses have figured that out through 4 weeks. And the Ravens certainly figured it out and provided a key to everybody else. They like to spread it out horizontally. Josh Allen, your player of the month, offensive player of the month for the month of September, which is fantastic. You need him to start throwing it downfield a little bit more. I know that's just not necessarily Samuel's game, but you got to get Samuel involved. I got to see it with my eyes.
I think, actually, that the way you win this game, Danger, just keep it on the ground. Like, in this game. And I think we will have one of those, yeah, but sort of things. That's kind of what I see. I tip in my hand here. We'll give our official picks tomorrow, but I think the Bills bounce back. But it's one of those, yeah, but you know what the standard should be. You got it done. Josh put on his cape, whatever it is. But I don't think, because I look at what Houston can do in the running game, they can't do anything right now. And I think that plays right into the Bills' hands here on that side of the ball. Before I get to my next tag, just good news for you, bud, about banking sleep. That Padres-Dodgers series, this might come as a shock to people. 8:38 Saturday for Game 1 on FS1. And then Sunday night, they're going to go head-to-head against Sunday Night Football, 8:03
okay.
on FS1. So I don't know what your plans are while you're in Chicago, but if your daughter passes out or whatever, that's how, like, I feel like that was me how many times on a family vacation. Okay, kids are, okay, what's on? You got Dodgers Padres on both nights.
Yeah, I'll just leave her in the room, go find a local sports bar somewhere and watch the game. Sounds like a plan. I love that.
Danger the dad bar downstairs.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she can come down if she wants to. I know my daughter. She's like, no, I'll just stay in the room. She'll probably just want to stay in the room. Okay. She's not going to want to stay in the room and watch baseball, I can tell you that. So, yeah, that's going to be the series. I will listen to the person who says that the winner of that series is going to win the World Series. That feels strong. That feels like that could be the truth. The way that the Padres have been playing and are playing, the way they were easily able to dispatch of the Braves, and now how do they? I mean, clearly they match up with the Dodgers. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, there is one issue. Last night's starter Joe Musgrove, something's wrong with the arm or the elbow or something else like that. So they don't. It's not like they don't have any problems, but I think you're right. That is just a series that you would figure whoever comes out of it. Sorry to Met Philly fans, Brewer fans. Jacksonville, back to the NFL. They're at 0-4. And you got this report from Jordan Schultz, who we've had on the show before. Head coach Doug Peterson has lost the locker room, that the Jags, quote, are completely rudderless. Well, Peterson, they ran that back to him, and he responded, quote, I talk to these guys every day. I see them every day. And no, I have not lost the locker room. Okay, here's the rule in the sports bar. If the conversation has come up that you've lost the locker room, guess what? Indeed. You've lost the locker room.
How do you actually quantify what losing the locker room means? Is it one guy who's against you? Is it a faction of guys against you that are tuned in? I mean, there hasn't been any buy-in at all. You could just tell that there's not any buy-in in Jacksonville on either side of the ball. Like, this feels like a lost season, and calling the team completely rudderless feels accurate. But I'm just curious as to what constitutes losing the locker room? Because I'm sure there are guys,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there are guys in the locker room that are there to do their job and will do what the coaches are asking them to do and will buy in. It's not universal where the entire locker room is anti-Doug Peterson. Maybe they were when Urban Meyer was their head coach, but certainly not with Doug Peterson. But I agree with the rule. I think that if there's ever talk of a schism, if there's ever talk of a coach losing a locker room, then yeah, you've lost the locker room. And that kind of makes it interesting that a guy like Robert Saleh is still employed, because I felt like that guy lost the Jets locker room or has lost the Jets locker room on multiple occasions through his tenure as the coach of the Jets, yet he is still employed.
I think probably, I mean, the locker room is at the quarterback. I feel like if we just went down, like, can we just boil it down to the coach quarterback relationship? We all know, we got the reports that in Philadelphia it's bad.
Yeah.
I ultimately, Nick Sirianni is doomed. He's doomed. Anything short of a long playoff run for Philadelphia, and the quarterback is going to win out. And isn't that kind of the same case in Jacksonville? Well, what has Trevor Lawrence done? He hasn't done anything. He's got the longest losing streak in the league, in fact, right now at quarterback. But the Jaguars have lost 9 of their last 10. You're paying the guy. You're paying him more than Josh Allen. So the owner's going to be like, where's my return here? So it's, yeah, as bad as it may be for many teams, you're not Jacksonville right now.
Week 5 gets underway tonight. Oh, by the way, I know you won't watch this, Gene. I'll watch it so you don't have to. Falcons hosting the Buccaneers. They're in Atlanta for Thursday Night Football tonight.
Does it make me a bad fan, Danger, that last night, all right, the Chirino homer, it's 3-3, and they're keeping this kid out. That the second homer, as soon as it was 5-3, I turned it off. I emerged from my office, went up.
You were frustrated.
Watched with the executive producer, white collar, whatever she was watching.
Like, you were frustrated.
I was angry.
It's better than stewing. I think that's a better move. For your mental health, it's better than continuing to watch and stew. Now, you would have felt horrible had they done the miraculous and come back from that deficit in the ninth, but I think sometimes you do have to just kind of unplug. You have to turn it off, walk away, don't throw anything, don't lose your cool. Does it make you a bad fan? No, I don't think it makes you a bad fan.
No, and I had all this homework to do last night, and what did I do? I just plopped on the couch, and I'm watching this. So yeah. I do not feel good about my actions last night.
Yeah, well, tonight, the decisive game 3 in Milwaukee. We'll see if the Brewers or the Mets advance to take on the Phils. And then on Thursday Night Football, the Falcons hosting the Bucks, with the Bucks getting 2.5 points. Which way are you leaning on this one? What do you think? I kind of like the Bucks in this one.
Yeah, until Atlanta, it just seems like Cousins and the Achilles. And granted, I haven't watched every Atlanta game, but wasn't that supposed to be, let's get a new coordinator, new quarterback, everything else? Like, if you are doing sports talk in Atlanta, like, at what point are you saying, wait a second, why did we draft this guy top 10? Like, let's see what Penix is all about. That offense has been stuck in neutral. Mm. They didn't score an offensive touchdown last week. They won. So I guess that makes everything okay.
Yeah. Yeah, when your kicker is your most valuable player.
Could the Bills trade for Young Hoku? Yeah, let's begin.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, we welcome you into the Sports Bar. Appreciate you listening. You can hear us locally at 95.7 FM, AM 950. You can hear us in the free-to-download Odyssey app, where we sound our best. You can catch up on anything you may have missed from the show in the free-to-download Odyssey app. Also, wherever you get your podcasts, just search out the Sports Bar. All of our guest appearances and shows are listed for you there. We're streaming the show on our YouTube channel at The Fan Rochester. We're streaming on Twitch at The Fan Rochester as well. Like and subscribe if you're checking that out. We appreciate that. And you can also get us on your smart device when you ask it to play 95.7 The Fan. Big Sunday on the way, with the Bills traveling down to Houston. This is one that we had circled the day that they announced the schedule, because it's the Stephon Diggs revenge game, right? Is this a story? Is it more? Are we making more of it than it actually is? We know it's something, but is it as big a deal as I think we and others in the media are making it?
Well, we get Seth Payne on. I mean, he once upon a time, like, crossed over to a different team, Jacksonville to Houston, and
is the revenge game a real thing?
Is it a real thing? Is this just media concocted? Here's how I would look at it from the outside. More often than not, these guys are business. They're businessmen. It's their job. They don't view it as fans would. I don't know. For some reason, I think Diggs is taking this personally and would want his targets this week.
Yeah, which might not be the best thing for the Texans.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let's develop a game plan. Bobby Babbitt, Sean McDermott sitting down. Let's bracket Diggs all game. Great.
Yeah. We'll check in with Seth Payne, who hosts the morning show on our Odyssey Sports sister station, Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Victor Hall of Famer, the pride of Victor High. Seth Payne stops by next in the Sports Bar. We'll get the latest out of the Texans and get you set up and preview Bills Texans, which is coming up Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock. You'll be able to hear the action while you're out and about on Sunday afternoon here on The Fan Rochester. Our pregame coverage gets underway at 9 a.m. Seth Payne, Sports Radio 610 in Houston, next on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.
The Fan Rochester Sports Update.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen named the AFC Offensive Player of the Month for September. Allen talking about going against the Houston Texans defense.
They got a couple of ends that are really fast. They do a good job of getting to the quarterback. In the back end, obviously everyone knows the corner they got in Derek Stingley. Great young player. Seemingly makes plays on the ball week in and week out. So got to make sure we're aware of what we're doing. And again, sticking to the game plan of what we got.
From practice today, Deion Dawkins was back at it. Wide receiver Khalil Shakir, though, did not practice today. We'll talk about the Texans coming up next. Rochester native Seth Payne, Sports Radio 610 in Houston, joining us next. Mets and Brewers tonight playing at the Siding, Game 3 in Milwaukee. The winner to face the Phillies in the divisional round. Sabres and Devils in Prague tomorrow. The regular season begins. Our coverage will begin at 1 p.m. Eastern. Gene Battaglia, the sports leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.
Straight up with no chaser. You're in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Always love when we get the chance to catch up with the pride of Victor High School Hall of Famer, former NFLer, morning host at our Odyssey Sports sister station, Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Seth Payne stopping back into the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia. And Seth is somebody who played in the NFL, played for multiple teams in the NFL. Is the revenge game a real thing, or is that just something we in the media like to make up because of the narrative?
Oh, that's a really good question, because it's one of those things that I think as a player, as a coach, you deny it, and but it's 100% real. And D'Amico Ryans talked about it this week, because you know he was in that same position as a player. He went to when he went off to Philadelphia, he came back and played here against Houston. So he's got very intimate knowledge of that. Now, you know, D'Amico never had any kind of interpersonal issues the way Stephon Diggs has had, perhaps. But D'Amico talked about how it always means something when you go and play against a team that either let you go or traded you. And, you know, whether the drama was real or not, you build it up in your own mind that you want to show them that that they made a mistake. So it's a matter of finding the balance and not going outside of what your responsibilities are or your role is in the offense or the defense. And, you know, so far, I don't think it's going to be a surprise to any Bills fans that Stephon Diggs has been awesome so far in the locker room. You know, his relationship with the quarterback, it's exactly all the same stuff that Stephon Diggs was with Josh Allen the first couple of years there. And now that his contract's just a one-year contract, I'd be really surprised if it's something that boils over. I think he and Josh Allen have both been super careful in the last week or so not to say anything that could be fairly interpreted as bulletin board material. But yes, to give a short answer to your question, yeah, it's real. It's real.
Yeah, for you personally, Seth, just your history, you were in that spot, right? Like, you ended up in Houston only because Jacksonville didn't protect you, and then you're in the same division. What was that like for you the first time you were going up against a former team?
Well, that, you know, thank you. You know what? Thank you for reminding me of this. I forget some things. I'm glad a lot of my life is on public record because I forget these things. And I'm not being sarcastic. That's 100% true. When both Gary Walker and I were both defensive linemen that went in the expansion draft to Houston, the first time we played Jacksonville, we really took it to them. And one of the reasons was not just that Gary and I were really motivated, but the Jaguars' offense didn't change their line calls. And, you know, we'd practiced against that offense for years and those players, and Gary and I were calling out plays beforehand. So it really steamrolled them to a degree because, yeah, they had a couple guys on the defense that were super motivated because we had played there. And then we also, you know, we did have knowledge of their offense that paid off. I don't think that happens as often anymore because everybody's hyper-vigilant about the calls getting picked up on TV and everything. But that's the other part of it. You know, Stephon Diggs, and not to limit it to just Stephon, but in this instance, Stephon Diggs has played against these defensive backs, and you can make an argument that these defensive backs, understand Stephon Diggs as well. And that whole cat-and-mouse part of it is it's sometimes a big deal.
How have the Texans played here through 4 weeks? I mean, they're 3-1, obviously. Their record speaks for themselves. But I think when you watch the games, if you're a Texans fan, I imagine that you're not really comfortable in any of these games. Are you, Seth?
No. It's been way more harrowing than it should be. And you look at the Bills. Okay, the Bills go up against a couple of subpar teams and destroyed them. You know, and then they have a letdown versus the Ravens last week. It happens. But the Texans haven't had a game yet where it's felt like they're firing on all cylinders. And they, you know, even against the Bears, they really took it to Caleb Williams and made him look like a rookie, but the offense wasn't really operating all that well. They had a debacle there in Minnesota. So there hasn't been a game this year, even after a victory, where the players, the fans, or the coaches all felt like, okay, yeah, this is who we are. And they're making some progress in some regards, but two of the biggest things are they've not been able to run the ball against defenses that are playing a boatload of cover two and just doing everything they can to take away the deep threat of Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell, the three top receivers. So that should be easy opportunities for the run, but they really haven't been able to run the ball. And then the really frustrating thing here has been, they've got so many self-inflicted wounds from penalties. And it's not just normal penalties. It's false starts. It's illegal formations. It's procedural stuff. It's all this stuff that just kills a drive. You know, in one series versus the Vikings, they had three straight drives in the first half after they'd already built a deficit where the offensive line single-handedly either took a big play off the board with an offensive line penalty or pushed them out of field goal range. They had four consecutive offensive line penalties in that game. And you can't beat good teams that way. And they know it, but it's three straight weeks of 11 plus penalties in a game.
Ooh, that's brutal. Seth Payne, 610 Sports in Houston, Sports Radio 610, our guest here in the Sports Bar. Seth, as far as who's carrying the rock this week, how big a concern is that? Is it end up going to be Cam Akers here?
Yeah, that's a big deal. Because, look, Joe Mixon in the first game ran for 159 yards. It was versus the Colts, who apparently can't stop the run for anybody. But Mixon looked really good. Mixon looked like this change of scheme where, you know, Cincinnati had gone to being in shotgun almost all the time. And Mixon tends to be a better back when they can line up with a QB under center with Mixon 7 yards deep and just hit it hard. And that's what it looked like in the first game. He rolled his ankle early in the second game, and we haven't seen him since. So he's a guy that covers up a lot of errors and issues on the offensive line. Cam Akers has been doing way better than anybody should have expected from a guy who's coming off his second Achilles tendon tear. But they could really use Joe Mixon, especially versus the Bills. That, you know, the Bills, like, obviously they're a little bit, they're not as good versus the run as they are versus the pass. The Bills play a boatload of cover two naturally, so they naturally do what all these other teams have kind of been tweaking their scheme to do. But Joe Mixon was not practiced either Wednesday or Thursday this week. The ankle sprain seems to have been a pretty tough one, and at this point, who knows? You know, the old rules were if you didn't practice at all, you weren't going to play. Those days are long gone. But so far, I'm not overly optimistic that Joe Mixon's going to play in this game.
Seth, can we talk about the defense a little bit? Because I feel like you have teeth on all three levels here, and it starts with that pass rush off the edges with Hunter and with Will Anderson Jr. How have they performed through 4 weeks?
They've done well. It's not as menacing a pass rush as I think we would have hoped. And those guys are getting chipped a lot, and they're getting, you know, guys are sliding their protection to them. The interior defensive line is a weakness both in the run and the pass. And it's been a mixed bag. I mean, they've had some good pass rushes at times. The defensive tackles have actually gotten, you know, including Tim Settle had two a couple in a game.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is they're kind of the beneficiary of the defensive ends collapse in the pocket or flushing the quarterback. So that's still a work in progress. It's like a lot of things on this team right now, it hasn't been as good as it looks on paper.
Tell us your thoughts here on what you're seeing out of Buffalo, because it is a Bills offense, and we kind of got a sneak preview at the end of last year what this would look like without Stephon Diggs when they changed coordinators. And through three games, Seth, fantastic, and then all of a sudden you faced a buzzsaw in Baltimore. What are you seeing on film here from Buffalo?
Well, it's, you know, Josh obviously is doing all the things that everybody has noticed about Josh Allen this year. That's why I think he's currently the MVP favorite, right? I think distributing the ball the way he is and getting everybody involved and just, especially in those first three games, that's been impressive. It's looked like a new and improved version of Josh Allen. But then, unfortunately, you look and you see, like, oh, unfortunately, if you're facing the Bills, you look and you see, oh, yeah, and he still runs it, but it looks like he's taking fewer hits than he used to. So that part's a little bit discouraging. I think that right now where it matches up versus the Texans and where it'll be interesting is if the Bills haven't been able to hit the deep shots and threaten deep the way that you'd like them to, they're facing a team in the Texans that has given teams opportunities either through coverage errors, mental errors, at times the safeties. You know, Jimmy Ward specifically looks like he's just getting up there in years and he can't run as fast as he used to. They've had multiple times where in the Well, in the Indianapolis game, they allowed five plays of 30-plus yards. I want to say it was actually more than 30-plus yards, but some huge, huge deep shots downfield. But then the one area also is Kamari Lassiter, the rookie cornerback. He's played really, really well, but he's also had some glitches. And last week versus the Jaguars, I think pretty much everybody else in the stadium had this thought. After Kamari Lassiter let guys get behind him a couple times and were wide open, if Josh Allen were the quarterback instead of Trevor Lawrence, there's no way the Texans would have won that game. You know, Trevor Lawrence airmailed a couple of easy touchdowns. That first game, Anthony Richardson airmailed an easy touchdown. And, you know, we know that Josh Allen's not that guy. That's where the feeling in Houston very much is, all right, these guys have not shown that they could beat a genuinely good quarterback yet. You know, and whatever Sam Darnold is this year, they couldn't beat Sam Darnold. And this is the first real guy. You know, the Vikings are a good team, I think, but the Bills were a known good team headed into the season. Josh Allen is a known quantity and is genuinely playing at an MVP level. I thought they were doing great, you know, until they botched the fake play there and trying to come back from that deficit against the Ravens. So this feels very much like a primetime game. Like even though it's at noon Central, it has all the feelings of you're headed into a big time primetime game.
So it's interesting, Seth. I'm curious. I don't know how much of the Bills you've been able to see on their offense so far this year, but it feels to me like they're offense starts in the horizontal passing game, but you're saying that there's opportunity for the Bills if they wanted to stretch the field in the vertical passing game against this defense.
I think it's one of those things where if they can scheme it up and if they can design some things that a young cornerback might bite on, or if they can get some guys deep down, you know, and get the safeties isolated on routes, man-to-man downfield, then yeah, there's some opportunities there. It's gotten better since the first week, but there's still been they've gotten lucky a few times. So they have given up some opportunities. And D'Amico has not, you know, last year and when he was in San Francisco, he didn't blitz a whole bunch. He's shown more willingness to blitz and play aggressively when he feels he needs to, and I think that's where the opportunities come in.
Seth Payne, our guest, as we're talking about the Bills and Texans, here in Western New York, there's kind of a feeling of, all right, that wasn't it wasn't great by any stretch, that loss to Baltimore, but we take a look around the division. Okay, New England, we knew they were in a rebuild. Unfortunate to see what's happened down in Miami, and the Jets appear to be having some dysfunction. To a certain degree, is that the same thing in the Texans division right now? Because you're looking at a Titans team that you don't know who's going to be the quarterback right now. Indianapolis, they're certainly building. And then Jacksonville, who expected them to be 0-4. Are Texans fans feeling comfortable where they are in the division right now?
I think that there's a certain comfort level in that. But we're also a city that just watched the Astros go to the playoffs because the AL West was so atrocious. And then they lost. They got swept in a three-card series in the playoffs. So there's no part. We're not in the mood for weak divisions right now. We understand there's a larger picture. And I think honestly, overall, you know, we were going over this, kind of doing we're calling it the quarter poll of the season, even though it's not that way anymore with the 17-game season. But after the first quarter of the season, I'm kind of pessimistic about the offense right now, but then I'm looking over the rankings and the Texans are the eighth scoring offense. And because scoring is so far down, I think a lot of teams right now really feel like, man, they're not offenses just aren't what they used to be, at least so far early in this season.
Seth Payne joining us. Expand on the Houston, on the Astros a little bit, Seth, while we have you. I mean, it's still fresh in our minds, and I think a lot of people were worried about that team going into the postseason, knowing that they kind of rebounded from a real slow start.
Yeah, oh, okay. So I don't want to make any excuses, because honestly, the Tigers are an interesting team, because you look at their offense, and you're like, okay, they don't have any hitters here. But A.J. Hinch in the first game came out and had a great strategy versus Framber Valdez and ends up tagging him for three runs in one inning by just having everybody hit opposite. And, you know, you can look at OPSs and batting averages and whatever else you want to look at. Like, it was a really good strategy that day. And then the biggest part of me, if I'm going to be a sore loser, I hate this three-game series because – you know, the Astros have better pitching depth. In a 5 or 7 game series, that tends to take over time. And you just you have one bad game, and if the bats go dry, then you're out. But I don't want to take anything away from the Tigers. They're scary right now. I mean, they've been the hottest team in baseball since July 1st, and they've got something brewing there that extends above and beyond the box scores.
How do Houston sports fans view A.J. Hinch? Always the guy, hey, he brought you a place, but then how do you view that era of Astros baseball?
I think that it's complicated. It's really complicated because, you know, Hinch, when you go back to the – around here I call it the being better than everybody else scandal. But if you want to call it the cheating scandal, then that's fine. You know, it was at a time on the team where the veterans, Carlos Beltran and those guys, were kind of at the forefront of a lot of that stuff. And A.J. Hinch did not like it. You know, there were various times during the season where he broke a monitor because he was pissed about it. But the managers in baseball don't necessarily always have as much power as the veteran players on the team. And I think as a city, it felt like A.J. Hinch kind of got caught up in the wash of a really ugly situation. And, yeah, certainly various people should have stopped it and this, that, the other thing. But, yeah, I think people have a lot of affection for A.J. Hinch. I mean, the Astros were just beleaguered and atrocious and awful for a long it felt like decades, but obviously it was a short period of time. So, yeah, people have good positive feelings about A.J. Hinch. I'm happy for him that he's kind of had a little bit of a retribution story here.
Seth, love having you on. Great to have you on in your hometown, and continued success at Sports Radio 610. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week, bud, and thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Looking forward to this week. It's going to be hopefully a good game. If it's not a good game, I think it's because the Texans don't get the better end of it. So I'm hoping it's a good game.
Thanks, Seth. Let's do this again. Appreciate you.
All right, my pleasure.
You got it. Seth Payne, Pride of Victor, New York. That's host on Sports Radio 610, our Odyssey Sports sister station in Houston.
All right, Bills fans, how do you feel? Like, if the Bills had a receiving core that you felt, and look, Shakir right now, you're hoping he'll make himself ready, but certainly sounds like there's some opportunity to move the ball downfield against this Texans defense, Mike Danger.
Yeah, I also found it very interesting that the revenge game is a real thing, that it's not anything that they talk about or they want to talk about in the media, but they have that inside of them. They're all competitors, and they all want to stick it to their former team.
Well, look at it this way. Like, you have to be up for every single game. You're going to get up more for one game? Well, then bring yourself up more for every other game. So that's why you get coaches downplaying it. You get players downplaying it.
Yeah.
And
it'll mean a little bit more if Houston beats the Bills. It'll mean a little bit more to Steph Diggs, and it'll mean to everybody else.
What about in reverse, though? Does this mean more to McDermott? Does it mean more to Allen?
That's interesting. I imagine it would mean something to McDermott, but I also put McDermott in an upper echelon. Like, this is beneath him. Like, this kind of petty, you know, this feels petty and beneath what he's about. And I think I kind of view Allen the same way. Like, yeah, when Allen says, yeah, I got a lot of respect and love for Stephon Diggs, I actually believe him, even though when they were teammates, Stephon Diggs was probably in his ear about a lot of stuff that Allen disagreed with or Allen didn't want to go along with. Because, and I'll say this, you know, it might upset Bills fans, the two of them made each other great. They made each other great. You can have any ill feeling you want towards Stephon Diggs, but without that guy, Josh Allen isn't Josh Allen that we know today. He's just not. They made each other. And Diggs, you know, also benefited from having Josh Allen targeting him as much as he did. So,
well, Danger, to your point, and this is coincidental, before Diggs showed up on the scene, what was the last game Josh Allen played? It was the playoff loss in Houston.
That's right.
And if you go back and watch that game, okay, John Brown.
Duke Williams.
Like, yeah, you had Cole Beasley, but he was playing on one leg at the end of that season. Look, you realize, wait a second, you need something better here. And Houston, at that point, they still had Hopkins.
Yeah.
That's how this league changes so quickly. And yeah, did Steph Diggs help make Josh Allen? You better believe he did, but then Josh Allen, can he make the next wide receiver?
Josh Allen yesterday on Stephon Diggs.
Hopefully, yeah. I'll say what's up, and hopefully it's the favor's return. I'm sure it will be, so we'll see.
A lot of questions, right? It's been going on for, what, 6 months, whatever. But you kind of get why this is a big deal around the league for people, two high-profile players, and now he's on another team, right, in that sense?
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm sitting here. It's like it's not the most unusual thing. I think this thing happens from time to time, and, you know, I got a lot of love for him. I still do. The things that he did for me in my career and the things that he did in the Buffalo Bill uniform won't be forgotten anytime soon, especially from me. So that's how I look at it. At the same time, you know, going into year 7, I understand the business and the aspect of what this league is. And again, I'm just trying to focus on what we got going in this building.
Last week, you addressed the fact that celebrating the mentality on offense here is not shot at Stephon Diggs. Why did you feel compelled to bring that up last week?
Well, I think people were making a bigger deal out of it than it was. And again, I'm a loving guy. I'm a loving teammate. I like to love on my guys and prop them up however I can. And I'm not doing that at the detriment of somebody else, whether that's him or anybody else that's put on a Bills uniform or anybody that's coached in our coaching booth. So I'm just trying to, again, be the leader that I am and be as authentic as myself to me as I can be, and just lead these guys that are in this locker room.
It's saying the right stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as how are you going to defend Stephon Diggs, we're going to get Terrell Bernard back. He has some thoughts.
You know, he was a great player. He is a great player now for us, or he was for us. And, you know, his explosiveness, you know, the things that he does, the energy he brings to the game, you can feel it on the tape. So it'll be fun. I'm sure a lot of us say what's up to him. So it'll be a good challenge for us.
How would you describe what it was like to have him in the locker room?
He was cool, man. He was a really good vet. You know, he never held back you know, information or, you know, things that he saw or how he saw the game, how he approached the game. So it was cool to be able to, you know, just learn from him and be in the same locker room with him for a couple of years. So like I said, you know, we're excited to see him.
It does got to drive him nuts because you're wired to only think about what's ahead of you, and you keep getting this story that's behind you brought up over and over and over again, and it's salacious and it's dramatic and we love it and we eat it up. But these guys just want to get to Sunday, man. They just want to get to Sunday and play the game and not have to worry about who he was when he was here, and rather think about what can we do to stop him now that he's there. Really appreciate Seth Payne stopping by and sharing some insight on this year's Houston Texans squad.
If before we get to break, and we'll have time for your calls in happy hour at 866-4FAN, let me pass along this note from the NFL today. 60 former players have advanced in the voting process for the seniors category of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. These are players that are not no longer eligible in the modern era. So the seniors committee can vote in a few of these guys. There's one guy that's on the list, falls under the category of special teams from Buffalo, Steve
Tasker. That's our guy. Come on now.
So here's what would be my advice to everybody. And we love, and they're not on tomorrow, by the way, because of the Sabres. But when they're back on Monday, resist the urge to congratulate Steve Tasker on being a finalist.
Yeah, no.
Because trust me, he doesn't want to hear it.
That's right.
When he makes it in someday, then we will have a big old party. All right? But the stress and everything else, I think it's a real thing when these guys are asked constantly. You know, it's kind of like the final act. And it always amazes me, Danger, that you have football, strong men, testosterone, everything, and hey, you made the Hall of Fame, Bill Cowher, tears. Mm-hmm. Hey, you made the Hall of Fame, Jimmy Johnson, blubbering. Like, what this means to these men to have their careers, their lives validated. And I don't think Steve Tasker is any different.
I think it means more to some than it does to others. I think you're right. I think for Tasker, it does mean something because it is upsetting to continue to be a finalist, but to not get the official nod and to hear it year in and year out. But then there are other players that I think they'll go through the dog and pony show, but it really they don't view it as the honor that it should be viewed as. I just think of, you know, a handful of players like...
Well, T.O. didn't even show up.
Right, exactly.
Didn't even... Oh, he wasn't on the first ballot. I'm not going.
Right. Yeah, there's, I think there's a handful of players that that are that way. We get a lot of time between now and April, but at some point the is Eli a Hall of Famer debate will have to rear its ugly head because he's eligible, right?
I think. Oh no, not April. Like that Super Bowl week they announced.
Yeah, so it's
and he is. He won two Super Bowls. He was the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, on that alone, you could say, oh yeah, he's got to be a Hall of Famer. But for some reason, everybody wants to look at Eli Manning and be like, Eli Manning. Why not? Is Neil Lomax going into the Hall of Fame next?
Yeah,
who's going in? If we're looking at Eli's stats. Good stuff. All right, so we'll get to happy hour next. We'll give you what we heard from today's practice at One Bills Drive. Got some injury updates as well. Get you set up for action tomorrow. NHL season gets underway tomorrow. The Sabres season gets underway tomorrow. Yeah. We got a round of shots and your calls. You mentioned it, Gino. 866-4FAN if you want to join us. 585-866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester.